extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, newly minted, but always in my heart, Brian Dunseth. Dunny is with us today, joining the show for an absolute banger. Christian Benteke is going to join us on the back end, talking LeBron, his celebration, aerial dominance. Is it developed or do you are you born with it? DC United's attention to detail. Plus, Wilfred Nancy, contract renewal. He's sticking around in Columbus. Is it MLS Cup or bust for Messi in Miami? And we'll get Dunny's take on the Western Conference. RSL, Chicho, Fidel Barajas, Sam Adeniran in exile, maybe in a hole behind the doghouse with Bradley Carnell, and much, much more, including Reynoso on walkabout and Evander's place in the league list of number 10s. Dunny, what's up, man?
My man, Andrew Wiebe, I appreciate you. I was thinking about this the other day. Remember, this had to have been, what, maybe like 8-10 years ago?
Oh, no.
New York City. It was the set. We were on camera together. I think we probably had the same haircut and the same tight, not only fade, but line. We were side by side. We were doing a show. I can't even remember what the show was, but I remember we were having so much fun as we were live.
Anytime,
I'm glad to be back.
Anytime you hang out with Dunny, whether you're drinking with Dunny on an RSL broadcast or doing an unnamed show 10 years ago that has evaded our memories, there's so many of those moments over the years. I knew that I needed to have you because there's so much going on in the Western Conference right now, including a bunch of free soccer on Sunday on MLS Season Pass. Dunny, Max Bredos, Cali Classico. That is a fit made in MLS soccer broadcasting heaven. You can watch it at 8:15 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday from Dignity Health Sports Park. And earlier in the day, also free, Charlotte, Minnesota. Give me a little tease of your life on the road this year, Dunny. How's it been? What's it like?
Listen, I am one of the luckiest human beings in the world. I get to hang out with Max Bretos every single week. And that is not a curse. It is a blessing, Wiebe, because I go all the way back to my very, very, very first national/international television broadcast experience. It was LA Galaxy, David Beckham, Hong Kong 11. Whoa. Kickoff time was probably around 3 a.m. local time in Los Angeles at the Fox Soccer Channel Studios. That's how OG this is, Fox Soccer Channel Studios, 1440. And Bretos to initiate me. I was nervous, right? I'm no longer the soccer player. It's now I've done Real Salt Lake. I'm getting in. I've done the radio stuff. I've done some of the TV stuff. First big game. And I say to Bretos, I go, Bretos, what do I wear? Like, what do you guys wear there? And he goes, oh, dude, wear some slacks, wear a collared shirt, you'll be mint. I was like, okay, cool. That makes sense. You know, travel day, whatever. I get in there. Bretos, I'm in the booth. I'm notoriously early. And Bretos looks at me. He's wearing like a tank top, flip-flop shorts. And he just goes, ha, ha, and just starts laughing at me. So that was, it was a much easier initiation than my days at Cal State Fullerton. But nonetheless, Max Bretos and I have probably called, I don't know, 200-300 games. We did 49 games together last season. And it's so much fun, whether it's walking and chatting, listening to music, having breakfast together, being with our compadres, whether it's the Spanish guys or the French guys. Yeah, man, it's been a really, really good time this last, 15, 16 months on the road together.
Roadies, the two of you. Speaking of those days, I'm thinking back to I thought you were going to say maybe the Pan Pacific Championship. Remember that one? I
forgot
one?
About on the turf. The yes. Turf in Hawaii. Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah.
What a tournament that was. Different days in Major League Soccer, but the faces remain the same. You can listen to those two jokers on Cali Classico. Should be an awesome match for San Jose. They're desperate for the Galaxy. Yeah. It's an opportunity to maybe blow somebody out to really show what they can do in front of their home fans. Before we dive in here, we've got Wilfred Nancy's contract renewal in Miami and the whole Western Conference, it seems like, via the mailbag. I just want to know the best team you've seen so far. Personally seen, in person, you called their game. This is the best team you've seen. Not in the league, just through your very own eyes.
Okay, so for context, I still haven't called an LA Galaxy game, and I haven't called a Houston Dynamo game. I've pretty much had everybody else in this league in terms of the top tier. It's hard for me, and I'm going to sound like I'm on the fence, but I don't mean to sound on the fence because I'm going to give you this construct in my mind. I still think LAFC is the most dynamic team I've done in the Western Conference this season. But then I go to the first half of Snowpocalypse, and Real Salt Lake wipes them off the board with a 3-0 halftime lead. I would say that St. Louis City is incredibly dynamic with how they play, but obviously they're not putting games away. Vancouver and the Vanni Sartini effect, I don't know if it's more Vanny than it is Vancouver Whitecaps, but there's something there that I can't articulate correctly. And I'm impressed by Colorado, but I'm not impressed by Colorado.
So I
think if you're putting me on the spot, and again, I haven't done LA Galaxy this year yet, so I'm really, really looking forward to this Sunday. I still got to say there's something about this LAFC team that right now, I think the building blocks of what they have, and knowing that in this summer transfer window, they're going to go all in, especially with these rules adjustments that are being reported by The Athletic. I'm going to go with LAFC being, as of right now, the most dynamic team I've seen so far, even though results don't match up with leading the Western Conference.
No, the results don't match up in terms of goal scoring as it relates to expected goals, and that's one of the things that LAFC have got to fix here. Denny Bawanga basically scored everything last year on his way to 37. This year, those numbers aren't quite at the same level. There's some chances going missing. The eye test tells you that. The numbers tell you, well, this is a big game this weekend, by the way, for LAFC.
Yeah.
Red Bulls coming cross country. Here's a question for you. Red Bulls right now, 4 more points. LAFC get to be in the West, which I think is a little bit more of a TBD, a question mark.
Yeah.
Who has more points at the end of the year? When Giroud comes in, we assume, when maybe Carlos Vela resigns, because now with the three U22 spots filled, you could go get three senior DPs. Red Bulls or LAFC, who has more points in the regular season?
LAFC. And I don't mean to dismiss the New York Red Bulls. And the only reason I guess I will go this angle, Weeby, is I would say that what we've seen from the New York Red Bulls over the past couple of years doesn't suggest that they're willing to really go out and spend exorbitant amount of funds during the summer transfer window. But I do think this summer transfer window, with the pieces that they have, specifically Lewis Morgan coming back as well, is absolutely the right time to continue to add to this team. But I just think there's so much sweat equity for me with the way that I look at the way John Thorington and company have constructed the squad, and recognize whether we're going to go to the South American under 20 championships, whether we're going to go out to the path less traveled of maybe mid-tier teams and mid-tier leagues, or we're going to go out and splash the cash when we need to, because we're capable of drawing the interest of the Gareth Bales or the Chiellinis, which then I think opens up the eyeballs of a Hugo Lloris, et cetera, et cetera. I just think there's too much there, and there's too much anger in the way that the three finals last year let them down for them not to make a really, really strong. And by the way, LA Galaxy reestablishing themselves. Yeah, I think I walk myself into it's LAFC over New York Red Bulls.
Do you think they need a different style of play?
LAFC?
It's very much on the counter, playing open space into their strengths, certainly.
Yeah, I don't think they, I would actually argue, I don't think they mean to be as dominant in a transition team as they are. Mm. I think Kike Oliveira and Denny Bawanga's speed certainly give them difficulties in catching up, I would say, for the rest of the team, just catching up. But I do think they want to be a methodical team. I just think that when they see those channels, I would say that they recognize that their opponent is at their most vulnerable when they're in possession. And when those soft turnovers happen, and you can get a Tillman kind of biting in, or an Atuesta biting in, or an Elias Sanchez breaking up a play, that their speed of play to finding a Bogus to drop back to play through, that's what they're so good at doing. So the press versus the counter press, the mid block versus the low block, conceding possession versus trying to win possession. I think they're all capable of doing, I think they're capable of doing all of those things. But I think the moment that they solve the number nine position, dropping Bogusz in a little bit deeper, all of a sudden, I think the effectiveness, in an ideal world, they don't want Otto West as deep as he has been. They want him with his connectivity higher as an eight, less as a six. So yeah, I think all of those come into play, but I don't know, man. I don't know about you. I'm also sympathetic to a Stevie Cherundolo and an Ante Razov and a Mark DeSantos recognizing that, what, five starters and two substitutes in an MLS Cup final are not on this roster. So maybe time will tell that they can be more pragmatic with the ball as opposed to as aggressive they are in the transition.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on all that. I definitely know that Steve would like to play a little bit more methodical at times, but also when you've got a couple hammers, go right. Find some nails. You know what I mean? Like if they can't stop Bawanga, if they can't stop Oliveira, and certainly Oliveira is probably the only one stopping himself in the final third right now. Yeah. If he could be a little more efficient, this gets terrifying.
You know who he reminds me of? You know who he reminds me of? OGs. So we can go OG here because I know you got some MLS After Darkers. Fabian Castillo.
Yeah.
That's what he reminds me of, Fabian Castillo. Like how his speed, and I was saying at the end of last year, give Kike Oliveira a preseason and he could be the next Denny Bawanga. I don't see it now. I see him creating the chances, but Denny needs two or three chances. Kike needs five, six, seven chances as of right now. And maybe that's the evolution of a young player, but he reminds me a lot of Fabian Castillo where he kind of would get himself. And I remember talking to Oscar Pareja years and years and years about this. Oscar saying, we're actually working in the final third for him to slow down his moment of thought. And so, can he be more prolific with his decision-making as opposed to being reactionary to the moment inside that penalty area, which I thought was really crazy insightful for a manager to think about developing an attacking player like that.
I mean, the difference between the great players and the good players is always decision-making and the bad players and the good ones. I mean, do you recognize the moment and do you make the decision then have the physical capability to do it? It's clearly Oliveira has the physical side.
Yeah.
But it's that moment where you're sped up, where you're trying to do too much. Like, simplify it, man. Simplify it. Well, we'll see what happens at LFC, but the Red Bulls, but it should be a good game. 10:30 p.m. Eastern on MLS Season Pass. Before we start diving in, I got a couple other quick fire things for you here. First, Wilfred Nancy contract renewal. That is a wonderful thing for everyone in Columbus and a semi-terrifying thing for everyone else around Major League Soccer, in particular the Eastern Conference. What does this mean for the Crew?
Everything. Long-term stability, leadership, and I think not only I would point out two more things coincides with Wilfred winning the battle with Cucho and how his substitution mannerism came back to haunt him and could have come back to haunt Wilfred Nancy, knocking him out of that first leg against Tigres. It speaks to Columbus winning against Tigres and coming through that tie. But I goes back to Bezbachenko and this ownership. I mean, I've always said, if you know what your guy is, go get your guy. And Bez immediately upon the success, and listen, I was one of those that certainly wasn't critical of the announcement of Wilfred Nancy getting CF Montreal, but certainly interested to see how he would do to replace Thierry Henry when kind of the unceremonious departure transpired. And to see how quickly he got guys on board, whether you're talking about Piet, you're talking about Kai Kamara, Victor Wanyama, and that run. I mean, I did their two playoff games for ESPN, and I believe it was against Orlando City, and it was NYCFC. And to see the way that he had such a presence and such control on the sideline, but also the respect that he earned with the players and then the game model. Those were tough shoes to fill last season. And Laurent Courtois seems to be filling those shoes, albeit doing it a little bit differently. Obviously, that the pyramid or the parachute of being underneath him, the umbrella, if you will, comes under Wilfred Nancy as well. But I just think when you talk about style of play, how do you not have, and I'm not saying you in particular, but how would anybody not have Columbus as one of the most fun teams to watch in Major League Soccer? I mean, possession with purpose, variation, stability, playing out of the back. I mean, they are, in my humble opinion, if not the most well-rounded team in Major League Soccer, certainly up there with the most well-rounded teams because they have everything. And it comes down, and I know you've been on the calls with Wilfred. He won't give you starting 11s, but he'll give you the insight if you ask the questions of tactically what he's trying to achieve. And I just think his individual management with players within the context of a team, it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. So
completely agree.
You've got new ownership that loves to spend. You've got local ties to ownership and Dr. Pete. You've got one of the best stadiums in the league. You've got one of the best training facilities in terms of what they've created. You've got one of the best setups with Crew 2 and the success that they've had the last couple of seasons in MLS Next Pro. And I just think that everything that they're doing, I don't think they'll ever be considered a super club because of the location. But I think if we're talking about the foundation of a super club, they are checking every single box.
I think the beauty of MLS is that you don't have to be reliant completely on location to be that super club. Yeah. I mean, look at the, you know, UEFA and the Champions League. Like, you're not seeing quote unquote farmers teams rise to that level. It's Paris, it's London, it's, you know, it's Madrid. It's the biggest cities, the biggest clubs in the world. And MLS doesn't have to be that way. You can build the best club in the league in Columbus.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening right now.
Yeah.
There is freedom and there is inspiration in structure for Wilfred Nancy. Like, if you look at his teams and watch, you think, oh boy, these guys are doing what they want. No, they are within the confines of what Wilfred has built and has taught, not just to the first team, but all the way down.
Yeah.
And I think that's where the value comes for the Crew. It's not just the first team. To be truly successful and to do it maybe in MLS on a salary cap constraint, like, you need to maximize every roster spot. You need Mo Farsis. You need Zawadzkis. You need Patrick Schultes, who are taken in the draft and then come up through your second team and become Arfston. MLS Cup winning.
Yeah.
I mean, Arfston taking penalties in Champions Cup and just being like, no sweat, dog. Like, this was light work for me.
Yep.
Wilfred is able to take big players, players who might be on the fringes, and make them all feel the same amount of importance within the team. And I would quibble with just one thing you said, which is, I don't think it was a battle with Cucho. I don't think there was a battle. It's like, this is Wilfred's team.
Yeah.
It's his way.
Set the tone.
Or there's no other way.
Yeah.
The culture is so strong that, for me, you already see Cucho sort of back into the fold, back into the team against Tigres, talking publicly about the red card against Charlotte and saying, you know, look, it was a moment that I regret, but I was sort of pushed and escalated up to that point, and we've moved on. We're good now.
No.
I mean, this is one of those signings that I said when it came out yesterday, this is bigger than any single signing, any probably transfer window that any club can have.
I agree.
Because it is the foundation of every decision you make, every moment that you have on the field in a competitive game, in the training facility, throughout the offseason, in building the structure of your club. And he is the headliner. And by God, I would run through a brick wall for Wilfred. Just listening to him talk about how he inspires his players and ask them to do more than they think that they can do. It's pretty incredible stuff.
We be really quick. We were down at MLS Media Day in Florida, in Miami, and talking with Wilfred. And I remember asking him specifically, I'm like, okay, cool. So you've had your first day impression. You've had your first day training field impression. You've had the success that ends with an MLS Cup trophy. You have now proven that there's not just concept, but there's proof in concept. How do you say goodbye to your team and know that when you reintroduce yourself to the team at preseason day one, you know, this is the new start. You have to build upon the success, but no way are you the finished product. And he tells this story about how he was driving in the car with his wife, and he just basically goes, like, looks at his wife and he goes, I got it. And she's like, I got what? And he goes, I know what I'm going to say to the team on the very first day. And I was just like, dude, that's so, like, just to give us that insight of, like, those, like, moments, those human moments of, like, you forget he's a family man. You forget that he goes home. You forget that he's got to figure out a way to piece together a personal life and still run this, you know, help be a part of running this entire organization as one of the head honchos that everyone's looking to, that effectively has to either answer or deal with everybody else in this bubble around the Columbus Crew. And it was just like that moment where driving in his car, probably having a conversation, like that aha moment, like, I know what I'm going to do. Like, just, you know, it just kind of brings him back down to really good dude. really good dude that's and by the way, breaking barriers, breaking down barriers and recognizing that within the success of his individual ability, that he is now opening up doors for hundreds of thousands of managers around the world that probably always felt like they needed someone to break that glass ceiling. And Wilfred's done that. So, I remember talking to him right after the game, what it meant on the field at that stadium, lower.com stadium. And just the pride in his voice of knowing how many people would eventually reach out to him and think about Major League Soccer as an opportunity for me, because I certainly am not getting it here. I've hit the ceiling. In Major League Soccer, look at what Wilfred's done. I could have that same opportunity here.
It took him a while to get there, too. He had to be patient. He had to build all these tools.
Academy, dude. Yeah,
and develop the perspective. And now he's here and he's staying, and that's good news, because there was definitely a feeling that, hey, if a club from France or maybe in Belgium or wherever it might be was looking for a new manager, wanted a guy that could connect all the sinew throughout the club all the way down to the youth level, and, oh, by the way, also play incredibly effective, beautiful, exciting soccer, Nancy would be a good option. Now, that's not over. Contracts are just contracts, folks. But for the time being, Wilfred Nancy's sticking around. To compete for MLS Cup, Nancy's got to get through Miami this year. Eastern Conference, Lionel Messi, Luis Suarez. It's been an interesting start. Obviously, Champions Cup is over. So now MLS Cup has got to be the goal. Is it MLS Cup or bust for Miami in your mind? Like, if they don't win this thing, are we just they get knocked out of whatever round in the playoffs? I just feel like there's a huge amount of pressure on the entire organization to deliver, and to deliver now, and to deliver at the very, very highest level.
I would agree 100%, because I think in real time we are seeing a nuclear arms race of spending coming into the league, and credit to Jorge Mas is the investment group, to David Beckham and company, the Rolodex, the ability of Major League Soccer and the owners to ink the contract for Lionel Messi to be a part of what I think is David Beckham 2.0. The trajectory of this league changed dramatically when David Beckham came to Major League Soccer. That is undoubtedly true. I still don't think he gets enough credit. But now with Lionel Messi, I think because there's this fear of this kind of like, I'm using my hands in this ball. There's this fear that we've got this finite amount of time to have Lionel Messi and the Lionel Messi effect. And let's go commercial off the field. What he's brought to this league and the eyeballs is extraordinary. And the partnership with Apple and the connectivity, extraordinary. And so in this fast forward moment where you get Jordi Alba and you get Busquets and you get Luis Suarez in particular, to have those players together and to have that brand recognition, you certainly are hoping that on the field that then they are going to be able to do what they have always done. And I think they've shown throughout the course of this season that they are certainly capable of doing whatever they need to do to find the results, and do it with style and substance and panache and everything, because they are the team that everybody wants to watch. Now, are they the team that turns into the villains at some point? Potentially. But in the meantime, they're must-watch television. They are absolutely must-watch television. I don't care what's going on in my weekend. I'm still figuring out a way to watch an Inter-Miami game, whether that's live or immediately recorded or it's the highlight package or whatever. I'm heading over to Apple. I'm clicking on to MLS Season Pass, and I'm trying to consume, because this group gets you off your feet. It gets you off the sofa. It gets you like touching your face like, oh my God, how did he do that? So that's what they're capable of doing. Now, that being said, Weeby, I had them coming in fifth in my preseason predictions. Because what I was concerned about was multiple competitions. I was concerned about international duty. I was concerned about this summer with Copa America and whatever transpires around this. I was concerned about the wear and tear and making sure that you could keep this group healthy, which has already been a major point of conversations, I think, with concern. So I think you're going to see more teams that are consistent over the course of the regular season. But on any given day, I think it's really hard to go against or predict that Inter Miami isn't going to win despite the opponent, whether it's at home or on the road?
Call that the League's Cup theorem, right? Yeah. Like when Messi's on a heater, when the guys around him figure out how to play with him.
Yeah.
When he's healthy, it's almost impossible to stop him. We've seen that already, 5-5 through five games, I think it is. And that was a wonderful performance against Kansas City when he didn't have that many opportunities. So I was just wondering, like sitting around here, like, man, trying to plot it out. 5-5, like thinking about MVPs early on. And of course, Lionel's going to be the favorite unless he's not around. What's his stat line at the end of the year? Like, could he go... I don't know. Could he go 20-20?
Thank you. I keep coming to that number in my head. I thought single-handedly he was going to get or will Miami into a playoff spot. And obviously the injuries derail.
So this is the thing, right?
Yeah.
You got to play enough games to get to 20-20, but 5-5-5. So like, what if he plays 20 games, why couldn't he?
Look at the course of his career. I mean, these outside of that one season at Barcelona when he was dealing with that calf issue, maybe like 7-8 years ago, he's been incredibly fortunate to stay as healthy as possible. And unfortunately, you know, he picks up that injury on international duty, which then, you know, how do you keep your body right? How do you keep your body fresh? We still don't know, I think, maybe long-term. And maybe that's why we're seeing some of the injuries, the impact of the brand itself with preseason responsibilities and opportunities in the commercial side. Is he capable of 2020? Absolutely. I mean, this is a guy that was scoring 40, 50 goals a season.
It's not the question, right? Yeah. It's just the time.
It's the durability.
On the field. Yeah,
durability.
Just the time on the field.
That's so I'll go 15-15, but certainly able to do 20-20 easily.
If I gave you Messi or the field for the MVP, what would you take?
Messi versus the field or versus just the turf, the artificial surface? Listen, I'm a Messi guy. I'm unapologetic when it comes to Messi versus Ronaldo. That's just me. And this is coming from a Manchester United fan of Cristiano Ronaldo back in the heyday. I just think that when he's on the field, there's no one else that is capable of doing what he's capable of doing. I use this example a couple of months ago. Remember, did you ever see the movie The Legend of Bagger Vance?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah.
Okay. With Will Smith and I remember there's just kind of that moment where they do kind of like this pixelation of the way they sees the fairway or sees the putting green. And I feel like that's Lionel Messi. Like he just sees things artistically, mathematically, visually, creatively that nobody else sees.
I would say. Yeah.
He's the best all time. All due respect to anybody who wants to make any argument. I think it would be naive to bet against what he's capable of doing.
I'll take Messi, and that's the odds wise. That's not math wise. That's not the right bet. But I'll take Messi when it comes down to that. I mean, you just see it in terms of space. That's the thing that impresses me the most with him. It's recognizing where space will be about 10 seconds before it occurs and just slowly, methodically pulling you into the wrong space, inviting you out, letting his teammates have their moments, and then just walking backwards into the gap. And then once he's there, nobody can do what he can do. So it doesn't need to be a big sliver of space. It could be a tiny moment. It could be a blink of your eye, but he understands that space, that moment. Here's what I do with it. I can execute that every single time at a different level.
There's a great book that I just read not too long ago about La Masia and Barcelona, and kind of the transition of years, right? All kind of smashed together. And one of the coolest things I read, and then I saw it in real time, was just how Messi for the first 5 or 10 minutes is just walking and scoping out the spaces. And he's just figuring out what the other team's doing, weakest foot, you know, strong foot, weak foot, who's fast, who's strong, who likes to go tight, who likes to create space. Do they want to press and do they want to counter press? Do they want to back press? All of these things in real time. And it did this description of this book, and I can't remember the name of the book, but then you go and you watch him. And I challenge anyone out there that's going to listen to this, just watch him for the first 5-10 minutes. He is calculating visually what everybody's doing on the field, and he's looking to pick it out. And then once he goes, that burst of speed, and it's incredible. It's incredible what he does. You know, we could wax poetic and go on and on, but there's a reason why he is Lionel Messi.
Yeah, I kind of banged on Kansas City after last weekend because I thought they played pretty well overall, but those three or four moments when you give Messi space, it was just like, my God, guys, you can't allow him to come inside into that pocket and have multiple angles to play a pass and to be facing his teammates and the goal and to have time. But then it's like, you know, you have to rewind it back and you'd be like, everybody knows that you can't do that. And nobody has stopped it over the course of 20 years.
So what makes you special?
You know what I mean?
I remember someone threw it up on social and they're like, oh, look at the defending. And they're like, they threw up a clip and here's Argentina versus Croatia. And here's Vardiol getting spun like a top and getting sprinted past on the sideline and gets all the way down to the end line, just gets drilled into the ground. It's like, who are we talking about here?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like anyone's gifting this guy space.
It doesn't matter who you are. You can get the smoke. Yeah. So you're a big Messi guy, obviously. Yeah. And over many years, you've been extremely close to Real Salt Lake. Hmm. What's working right now for Pablo and the boys, and in particular for Chicho?
Yeah, I would think the style's a little bit different. I don't know how many people have really paid attention to Emeka Anelli's development, which is like this hybrid of a Darlington Nagbe and a Diego Chara that's happening in real time. I think his partnership with Ojeda. You know, I was really interested in the offseason because Paulo Ruiz was coming back, right? And the way that they played, and Paulo Ruiz kind of played in that kind of hybrid of a dual six, dual eight in front of the back four, that wand of a left foot was just spraying kind of passes all over, you know, up for goal of the year for his hit, 60-yard dime at DC United. But when he went down against LAFC and the meniscus tear, I think that really forced Real Salt Lake to start thinking about how they wanted to play, and especially with Chicho coming in and Diego Luna developing in real time. So coaching staff is unceremoniously dispatched underneath Pablo. Jason Christ comes in as well. And now you got Nate Miller coming from his time in San Diego with Landon Donovan. Anthony Pulis comes in. You know, he was some time in Miami and obviously a really strong playing career. And then Mirza comes up as the academy goalkeeper who helped develop a guy like David Ochoa. Hamison Olave comes in. And so these dual sixes are now dual sixes, but they're tasked with winning the ball and driving the ball forward. Luna's a little bit more integral coming in centrally. Gomez is asked to play wide. Crooks, I'm still trying to figure out what the right role is and the connectivity, whether Chicho playing in the nine or Chicho playing in the pocket with Anderson Julio playing up top, gives them a different look. So I would say what's different is just kind of this base identity of the playing style that when you're asking these two central midfielders in Ojeda and Emeka Anelli to sit, then Katranis is all the way up high on that left-hand side. Whether it's Brody or Bodie on that right-hand side, all of a sudden it's this kind of square block of four that's protecting. And then all of a sudden you're kind of overloading on the flanks to create variation of service. So that would be the easiest way I would kind of describe what's different this way versus last year. But I still think they have issues. And the issues, Weeby, and I think it was on full display at the weekend against Columbus, it's the inconsistency of the quality of service, of the decision-making in the final third. And maybe much like we talked about Kike Oliveira at LAFC, that's Andres Gomez on that right-hand side for Real Salt Lake. Best performance so far this season, first 45 minutes in the snowpocalypse against LAFC, kind of torched Omar Campos. But then last weekend,
chains on, had the snow tires rolling.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a fun game to be a part of, but yeah, I mean that the weight of the pass that where he just chunks a pass, a cutback ball across the six to Chicho, where there's an opportunity for a defender to block, Luna trying to figure out the weight of expectation with the new contract versus what's being asked. Barajas, you know, chomping on his tail to get playing time. And then Matt Crooks, you know, injury start, what's his best position? They still have some things to figure out, but they've so far proven they're going to be once again a playoff team in the West.
Super encouraging, I would say, for RSL to make this sort of game model change and have it take shape with results so quickly. But I think I'm with you in the sense that there's one guarantee, and that is that Chicho's a shark.
Yeah.
And whether that's with the ball at his feet, sometimes creating, or it's being the, you know, the point of the spear, he is a given. It's the four guys behind him that haven't yet elevated into that position, and it's understandable. Andres Gomez is a young player. He's a guy who had not, if my memory is correct, had not played a huge amount of minutes professionally before coming to RSL. So this is a big part of his developmental path. It's not like a final product arrived in Sandy. Yeah. And it was just like, okay, cool, put him on the field. And we've got a, you know, a 10-10 player here in a wide position. Katrani's just signed. So did Crooks. So look, David Gostirum, we know it takes time. And then I think Luna's the interesting one. He was just absolutely irresistible last year for about a 2-month stretch, including the playoffs. And that really got expectations ramped up externally, but I'm sure also internally for him as to what he can do and what he should do.
Yeah.
So I would say preach a little patience with Diego Luna, and a little competition is probably a good thing for him. And Barajas has been special when he's seen the field. It's easy to watch him play and think, well, that kid's not 17.
Yeah.
This is not the first time he's been at this level.
No, he's a big dog too. He's a fully developed young man. He's got a man's body at 17. He's got a wand of a left foot, hit the post twice in Vancouver, had 2 assists in Vancouver in that win for Real Salt Lake. And then Eric Holt tackled him during the week and he didn't start the next weekend. And he was just devastated.
Come on, man.
Yeah. And now Eric Holt's out for the rest of the season. Marcelo Silva probably out for the rest of the season. So RSL is going to need to have out in the market and find a third center back because they cannot afford to lose Glad or Vera right now with the 2 backup center backs being gone and a player in Zach Farnsworth who had a really high threshold and a really high ceiling. Unfortunately, injuries have really curtailed the last 2 seasons for him. You know, for Luna, I think the one thing, and having been a part of the coverage for TNT for the U.S. men's national team game against Slovenia back in January, Luna Bajrakterević, fantastic players on the day. But Luna's doing kind of doing triple duty, but in the reality, doing double duty with the U.S. under 23. So this, like, hey, San Jose Academy, whatever, flare out, walks away, doesn't work, goes to El Paso, then comes to Real Salt Lake, a boy turning into a man, getting used to his body, getting used to level, getting used to the accountability, the work on both sides of the ball, professionalism off the field, nutrition on the field as well, and then managing the U.S. under 23s, knowing that once they qualify, he hopefully is going to be a big star of the show. Still has to prove to the manager that he is the star of the show. So I think he's got double duty and kind of proving not only to Pablo, but to Marco that, club or country, he's got to be an absolute starter. And it takes a lot of focus for a very, very young man.
We'll see, man. He's got a ton of talent.
Yeah.
RSL's got a ton of talent across the board in the attack. Try to get it all clicking at the same time. That's the goal. All right, let's keep it rolling here. Let's talk some games. How about Charlotte, Minnesota? That one's free on Sunday, 6 p.m. Eastern, Bank of America Stadium. It's been popping there, but I want to talk Minnesota. Nick hit us up and said, I'd love to hear your guys' takes on Reynoso's latest absence. Is he talented enough for the club to continue to deal with his baggage, or is it time to move on? If they move on, what is the best strategy for doing so? Here's the quote from Michael Boxall. Quote, I don't even know if anyone actually knows what the situation is. I think he's made decisions that kind of show everyone around here that he doesn't care too much about the club. And then Boxall goes on to say, hey, you have to take him at face value. The owners have a ton invested, so they got to do what's in their best interest. But in terms of on the playing field, quote, we've just got to move on as if he's not here because he hasn't been for a long time. Boy. I mean, my perspective is they have to move on. And I think part of the changes they made in the front office and coaching staff was a part of that process to move on. You know, bringing in a coach that's much more about the collective, bringing in someone in the front office that doesn't have a long history with Emmanuel Reynoso. But, you know, I said this on MLS season pass, you know, you fool me once, okay, fool me twice, you know, shame on you. And if it's fool me 3 times, if you're Minnesota, you just can't let it get to that point. But Reynoso's undercut his value. So what do you do? Do you buy him out? Do you hope a team in Argentina comes and get him? Do you welcome him back into the fold and see if that works, though it might screw up your chemistry within that locker room and on the field? Like, what do you do?
Yeah, this. I think you hit a bunch of data points, right? I mean, outside of Dr. Bill McGuire, how many others are truly invested in Emmanuel Reynoso? Whether it's the CEO, it's the general manager, sporting director adjustments, or head coach and coaching staff, listen, there's no doubt that when Reynoso's on the field, that left foot, what he's capable of doing, he's one of the best in Major League Soccer. Absolutely one of the best. And I played with Cameron Knowles out here in Salt Lake back in 05. I've known Cam for years. To see what he did throughout the course of preseason, waiting for the Eric Ramsey announcement, to see what he did the first couple games of the season was extraordinary. But I thought that thinking about Pookie, thinking about Reynoso, and thinking about a healthy Robin Lud, and then Bongi on that right-hand side, whoo boy, that would have been one of the best attacking four in Major League Soccer, not just the Western Conference. So with
some depth too, by the way, behind.
Yeah, him. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So I'll go back. I remember last year, I think it was Minnesota against Colorado. It was the early part of the season when Reynoso was not a part of the group, and I remember doing a pregame interview for Apple with Will Trapp, and I asked him on camera, you know, what how does it change, you know, because without Reynoso, you guys are much more workmanlike. With Reynoso, you end up deferring to him, and rightly so, because he's one of those special players. And it was interesting because he alluded to the fact that they really knew who they were without him. And they kind of didn't really know what they were with him because of kind of this stop-start. They had the memories of obviously of what he was capable of doing, but you kind of get to that. And listen, I played with Diego Serna at Miami Fusion. Talk about a flighty guy. I played with Jeff Cunningham. God, love his soul to death. He's one of my favorite human beings on the planet. But like high personality versus like, how do you bring them back into the collective? Do you deal with it, and how long do you deal with it? That's up to the club. So what I would suggest is, now, if we continue to see the evolution of growth, if there's one buyout, if there's two buyouts, you'd never want to lose value, but you also don't want to just be paying a guy that isn't invested in the club. Guys will get to the point where, even potentially down to something stupid as like punch-ups in the locker room or on the field, because you get so mad that here you are pulling in the same direction every single day, and you're like, dude, where is this guy? You know, and you kind of get to that FU moment where you're just done. So the fact that Boxall, undisputed leader inside that locker room, is now kind of verbalizing this publicly, I think that's enough of a curtain being drawn back to say, like, dude, what are we doing? Like, we got to make a decision. We can't have this type of distraction if we're building in this constructive new environment that we have.
No doubt. This is a rhetoric both in the club statement after it was revealed they didn't show up for the green card meeting that we hadn't seen before. I'm just like, hey, mm-hmm. We're focused on the guys here. There would always been sort of a kid gloves side of it in a public sense, but that's not what this is from Boxall. And we're hitting a point where it's, you know, that summer transfer window is going to come soon.
Yeah.
And we still don't have Amino Reynoso in the building and no sign of him coming anytime soon. Let's talk about a player who's got doing some special things for the number 10 spot. And he's got his coach behind him. Phil Neville said that Evander is the best player in the conference, maybe in both conferences outside Messi, you would assume, and maybe the best number 10 in the entire league. Jolyn Hutchinson wants us to rank number 10s and tell him where Evander stacks up. I just want to know, is Evander in the top five?
Yes. And zero hesitation.
Okay. Let's name some names here. So we got Messi. Yep. We're calling Messi a 10, yeah?
Yep.
Okay, so Messi, he's in the top five. Lucho Acosta, the defending MVP. Would you put him in the top five?
Absolutely.
Okay. Ricky Puig, does he go in your top five?
Absolutely.
Okay. So we only got one more spot outside of Evander. I got a lot of names here. I throw them out there.
Okay.
Is Carlos Heel in the top five?
He was.
Is Thiago Almada in the top five?
Oh, he's trying to be. He's trying to be again.
Let's see. Is Ryan Gold in the top five?
No.
Okay. Is Hani Mukhtar in the top five?
He certainly was a year and a half ago.
Okay. So we'd say the same thing about Sebastian Driussi. He's showing some signs of being back.
Coming back to life, yeah.
How about Emil Forsberg?
Oh, God. I like him so much. I like him so much. And as he ticks, Lewis Morgan will get better and better and better. I'm going to put him on my fringe. He's going to be on my fringe list.
Okay. So your five is Messi, Lucho, Puig.
Yeah.
Let's say Almada and then Evander. Is that
I'm not sure in that order, but I got Evander in my top five. Okay. I would agree with Phil that he's a top five. I still think that Ricky Pooch, in my mind, is probably, if I was going to rank tens in the West, I think I would have Ricky Pooch as my number one.
We'll get to Pooch in a second. You're calling Cali Classico. You just saw Evander. What makes him so special in your mind?
I like his attitude. I don't, and again, I don't have the insight of being a training, obviously, or being inside that locker room. But every time I've spoken to him on the coaches' calls, the pregame calls, all that, I like his attitude. He seems so like kind of chill and laid back. He seems I'm gonna try to wax this together the right way. But he just seems, doesn't he seem like he's a leader by example, not necessarily a leader by voice?
Yeah, but by God, that example is something.
Yeah,
I think it's an unflappability. With him in any given situation, you know, like when he's on the ball in tight spaces, I think there's just a confidence that comes from being able to give a player like that the ball and know that, hey, if I move forward, if I advance my position, if I make a run, one, he can find me, he can do special things, but he is not going to lose the ball.
Yeah.
By and large, it has happened. He's made bad decisions. I think back to Leagues Cup, but he's probably not going to lose that ball in a way that hurts me. And in particular, the way that Portland seemed to play, that's important with the other attacking pieces. And then it's also, hey, just play it in there. Find him. Find his chest in a weird spot. Find him in a position that looks, you know, just sort of benign. No danger here. And a faith that comes with having a player that can do the special and make it look very, very average. Like, it's just something that he was like, oh, might I take this off my chest and full volley it into the ceiling of the net? Yeah, maybe. Might I just spin around in a space that I don't have any business doing and find the top corner? There's just a faith and a belief that comes from that.
You know, as you were talking, you know, I just had a realization in my Cal State Fullerton three semesters without declaring a major doesn't really happen that often. I think it's really down to his size. You know, we're used to these like really, like not tiny, but smaller, super dynamic, you know.
Lucho's 5'3".
Great center of balance, little dudes.
Powerful, kind
of,
but 5'3".
Yeah, Ricky Pooch isn't big. Lionel Messi's not big. Hani's taller, but skinnier, leaner, if you will. Carlos Heel's super small. Almada's super small. I think for Evander, he's kind of a big dude. Like, I think it would surprise people to see him in real life, like what his size really looks like. So I wonder if it's like kind of he doesn't have like a Gio Reyna gait, right? He's not like long with his gait, like Pogba-esque. But with Evander, he's so nimble and quick, and he's so good at separating players using his body and getting that bump, that I wonder if that's maybe what I would say is, you know, for Phil, here's what's even more interesting conversation with Phil Neville. The team that he had in Miami, I think this Portland Timbers team right now is better than the team that he had in Miami before his unceremonious departure. And a lot of that has to do with, obviously, he's got a true playmaker. He's got a real number 10 in Evander. Yeah, I can see what Phil's trying to sell us. I don't know if I agree with it, but without a shadow of a doubt, Evander's one of my favorite attacking players in the Western Conference.
Hype your boy, man. Hype your boy, Phil. Like, if you need Evander...
let me cook. Just let me cook.
to play at this level, to be successful, like, make him believe. Put the responsibility on him to live up to that level. Now, I will say defensive organization needs to take a jump up as well for the Portland Timbers, but we'll see what they can do in Columbus this weekend. It's pretty important to have roles pretty well defined against that Crew team. Let's talk Cali Classico and Ricky Pooch. How would you defend Ricky Pooch, Joe Paintsil, and the Galaxy right now? Like, as a former professional stopper of goals and goal scoring chances, how would you try to defend these guys?
Kick them.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Kick him a lot. Right now,
I just fell off.
What happened?
I have an exercise ball chair, and I don't know. I just fell off the chair.
You just bounced.
I just went off the edge. That was.
Can we cut that? Can we get that? There's the social preview. No, I'm not joking. I think there has to be a physical element to it. I think what I would suggest is that San Jose is going to be at its most vulnerable in possession. I think with when they do have the ball, listen, they're going to suffer. There's no doubt they're going to suffer without the ball. They're going to be chasing and chasing shadows at times. And with the width, depending on what side, and it doesn't really matter right now with Paintsill and Peck, with Jovilich running the line, you know, you go back and you watch those highlights. I highly suggest, just go watch the highlight package on Apple TV of the game in Vancouver, and how quickly, when they win possession, Ricky Pooch drives forward, wiggles himself out of pressure, drives forward, and is hitting these balls into blind spaces where either Peck or Paintsill are already making the movement. You know, the visionary, like, you know, connectivity that they have so early in this season, specifically between Pooch and Paintsill, is everything that I thought, you know, people hoped that Ricky Pooch could unlock with Douglas Costa. I think
it's timing for me.
It is, right? Way to the passing
timing
running
of runs.
Crazy.
Is so good.
So
it's
good.
It's with Pooch. It's with Mark Delgado as well. He just has an understanding of, like, actually, I don't need to try to make this super deep run. Like, let me just sort of lull defenders to sleep. My first three steps are so good that if I time this right,
diagonal,
the vision and technique of my midfielders gives me every opportunity to sort of be in behind the back line, have my head up, and have time, space, and opportunity to either take it myself or to combine with Paintsill. Has been so good in those spaces too, and I didn't really know if he had that. And Greg Vanney said as well, like, hey, you guys just don't know how good he is in combination play, understanding relationships and timing and where other guys are and how it's all going to fit together in the final third.
You know what's interesting about Paintsill? I was doing the game. I did US Ghana last year out in Nashville. And I was watching in the buildup and the prep the game that Ghana had in Charlotte against Mexico. And Paintsill was the best player on the field. You know, Kudus was on the field. IU was on the field. Paintsill was the best player. So my whole thing at the desk in the buildup to the game was he was the player to watch. And the United States men's national team did such a phenomenal job in that game, the first 45 minutes in particular, but just literally Kudus, IU, Paintsill had nothing on the day. And I remember the announcement when LA Galaxy was going to go get him. I was like, oh, good player. And I was like, ooh, price point. That's aggressive. And I was like, and in my mind, listen, I come from the school of thought with, again, we talked about Wilfred Nancy. If that's your guy, go get your guy. I think I'm a little bit more sympathetic to spend and the risk of spend than maybe others. But for Paintsill, checking every single box, you know, that we talk about the adaption period and all that stuff. It's hard for me to have a realistic conversation about, oh, it takes time, let them adapt. Good players are good players. And Paintsill, and this is going to be probably a big conversation with roster construction, San Jose. You know, they're going to go within the league, you know, whether it's Alfredo Morales or it's William Yarbrough or guys like that, as opposed to really stretching the capacity of budget, you know, outside of Christian Espinosa. Listen, they can be incredibly effective. Look at Jeremy Obobese. You know, what do they do with Cade Cowell money when the summer transfer window comes? But they are certainly not in the spending category of where LA Galaxy are. And that's credit to Will Koontz and the entire infrastructure being remodeled. And so Greg Vanney has the pressure of performance now because he's been given the guys. I mean, I did this, you know, I do my list, my pregame list.
Love that.
Listen
list
to this.
For life, dude.
I mean, think about this, Weeby. In basically a year and a half, you go from Julian Araujo going to Barcelona B, right? Efrain Alvarez, Tyler Boyd, Raheem Edwards, Preston Judge, Koulibaly, Chicharito, Mavinga, Barrios, Billy Sharp, Jonathan Bond, Douglas Costa, Uriel Rosell, all gone. That's a power vacuum and a performance vacuum that Greg Vanney and company have had. And I think that, in my mind, when I try to have this construction of a conversation, that's a lot of, you know, we reference LAFC and seven players that participated in an MLS Cup final. What does that look like? Man, credit to Will Koontz and the LA Galaxy for what they've done so far, because it's been an incredible start. And hopefully a club that, you know, is near and dear to my heart, growing up in Southern California and going to the Rose Bowl and watching, you know, the 96, 90, my first game as a pro was July 4th, 1997 at the Rose Bowl against the LA Galaxy. 98 degrees, sang the national anthem. That's how old I am.
Sick.
And talk about a reference point. They didn't even have a number for me. My jersey is right there. It's an old Reebok with the Bic underneath it. And they stripped Rob Jockum's number 21. They literally white-outed the one because it was stitching. And they didn't even have enough time to put my name on it. That was my jersey for the afternoon. It's LA Galaxy needs to be back in that conversation, that rivalry. And I know Cali Classico is a huge rivalry for San Jose and LA Galaxy. But LA Galaxy and LAFC, you know, that if that's the juggernaut, that is the juggernaut not only for the city of LA, but it's the juggernaut for Major League Soccer.
Some of the judgment of GMs, I think, is very focused on the ins, but I think the outs are equally, if not more important at times. And one of the challenges in a salary cap league like this is how do you move on when a bad decision is made, when performance is below the standard that you need from that particular salary cap position, how do you move on? And that's what part of these buyouts are about. But boy, the work Will Kuntz did saying, hey, these are the guys that work, these are the guys that aren't. Let's not be ceremonious here. We have to make changes to get where we need to go. Well done to him. They're tough moving
roster.
Forward.
Yeah, tough roster. Very Chris Albright-esque when he took over Cincinnati is what Will Kuntz walked into at LA Galaxy.
All right, let's rapid fire here before we get to Christian Benteke talking LeBron, his celebration, and aerial dominance. Sporting Kansas City, St. Louis City, big game, Children's Mercy Park on Saturday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, a rematch from the playoffs when Kansas City ran roughshod over St. Louis City. Bradley Carnell on Sam Adeniran this week, quote, right now we're focusing on guys who bring a certain standard, intensity, work, effort, and training, and those players will get rewarded. Sam, up until further notice, will be training on his own. Boy.
Yikes.
That's a quote, man. He said it.
Yeah, Bradley doesn't mix words or mince words when it comes to accountability. And I think he and Lutz have created one hell of a roster. And I thought with Sam Adeniran, what he did in the second half of the season in particular last year, with Giacchini being sold, that this was going to be his year with Klaus. To the point where I did the game down in Austin at the beginning of the season, and Sam Adeniran had just scored a couple of goals. I think he had scored the goal against Real Salt Lake after Chicho had scored. It was the 1-1 draw, and he got the start. And I remember Sam was down in Austin, and Max and I were on the sideline talking to him, and his family members were there, and he was really excited to play in front of, you know, his group, his people. And Austin did a pretty good job minimizing his effect. And I remember specifically watching his body language come off the field. And it wasn't like a yikes moment, but it was like, oh man, he's pissed. Like, right? He's frustrated. He's disappointed. He wants to score. There's a feel-good factor here. And Klaus comes on. And then the next game, or maybe the game after, he did, I think it was against DC United. Bradley went to the 4-4-2 with the diamond, and he played Klaus and Adeniran up top. And it worked, but it didn't work. And they tied that game. Was it 1-1-2-2, something like that? And when they came to Real Salt Lake the following week, Klaus was in the starting 11. Adeniran was on the bench. So the idea of what happens behind the scenes, like, we do the thing, right? We judge the players, white lines, 90 minutes each and every weekend. We don't understand what happens in the training sessions. And whether you're talking about body language, you talk about attitude, you talk about disagreements, you talk about argument, you talk about performance, lack thereof, all of those things are important, and those are the things that we don't get to see at the weekend. So for me, for Bradley to come out with this type of language after the start of the season that Sam had, something's happened. Something hashtag no bueno has happened behind the scenes. So hopefully Sam can get his head on.
It's what happens going forward now. I mean, the message has been sent. Like, clearly
they need each other.
Had been sent privately, but also publicly, and there was some transfer interest. And Sam as well. So they do need him. They need a guy who can stretch the line in a little bit behind, who can run the channels. That's not really what Klaus is best at.
Yep.
And there's no Giacchini. That's, I think, the sort of the elephant in the room for me outside of, hey, there's an issue between Sam and Bradley right now. It's like, hey, they had another option last year who brought something different, who was productive. That guy's not here. So summer transfer window going to be big for St. Louis in a number of ways. Let me just truly rapid fire here, Dunny. You and I could just talk our faces off.
Yeah.
Who's your coach of the year right now?
Ooh, coach of the year.
I've got Ben Olsen. Do you agree or disagree?
I wouldn't disagree with Ben Olsen, but I think we kind of knew because of the US Open Cup that Ben Olsen was going to be one of I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
This is why. Last week, I'm going to keep it Western Conference-esque because I think Sandro Schwartz has done an amazing job with the New York Rebels. I would have told you last week that it would have been the ghost of Vanni Sartini or Vanni Sartini with the start that Vancouver has had. But again, I'm going to go with Greg Vanni. I have a tough time not giving credit where credit's due for this incredible turnaround, which has been utter disappointment of performance in the Western Conference playoff races these last couple of years to then this start. So I'm going to go with Greg Vanni on the Western Conference for my start.
I like it because both of those guys, Olsen or Vanny or Sandro Schwartz, I would argue, they're still another level.
Yeah.
And that to me is one of the most exciting parts about this time of year. We have a first picture. We have sort of a snapshot of who we think these teams are, but there's a transfer window coming. And there's also just, hey, our game model can be sharper. These guys can be sharper. We can get XYZ healthy. You know, if you talk about the Galaxy, it's Peck. If you're thinking about the Houston Dynamo, it's Sebas Ferreira and it's Ace. And then over in the Red Bulls, there's still some space to get better as well. Same thing for Vancouver. Same thing for Seattle. They face off on Saturday late night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Donnie, we just hit 1 hour and Anders is saying this has been wonderful, but we've got to get Christian Benteke his space. So
he's much cooler than I am. By the way, Benteke, I did ask him, where's the most difficult place you ever played? And he said Stoke City. So he did dial in. He said, cold, windy, defenders just hit you the whole time. Benteke, what a great personality.
Does he know the meme about Stoke City?
No, that's why I thought it was hilarious.
He's just speaking from experience. All right, Donnie. Big thanks to you, my guy.
Appreciate you.
All right, let's switch gears and coasts. Off to the East Coast we go, to the nation's capital, D.C. Christian Benteke, 6 goals, tied for the league lead in Major League Soccer. D.C. at New York City FC this weekend, 7:30 p.m. Eastern at Citi Field. Christian joins us now. What's up, Christian? How's it going, man?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you.
Let's start with something that's not soccer, but sort of is. I am always entertained after every single one of your goals when you wheel off to the end line and hit him with the LeBron celebration and push the haters down. Where did this come from?
It comes from him. I've always been, since I got into the basketball world, I've always been inspired by him. And because, you know, when you are, as me, as a footballer, you obviously you have players that you look up to. But then I was trying to to look to a different sport, and then basketball was the closest to football. And then LeBron, obviously, you can't go wrong by choosing him. And it's work ethic, it's discipline about his work. This is, we all know the great athlete that he is, but for me, it's more like everything that he does to be so great.
When did you get into the basketball world? When did you dip the toe in the waters? It seems like you've gone full all the way in now.
Oh, yeah. Probably now it's 2014, I would say, 12 years ago now.
What was the moment? He said, this is my guy. This is my sport.
It's probably when I was in Europe watching one of his games. And I started to follow him. And this is how I fell in love with basketball.
How do we make the connection between you and LeBron now? We got to put out the word. Have you met LeBron? Have you ever had the opportunity?
No, never. Never, never.
I think we need to make this happen, Christian.
But I'm the type of guy who, obviously, I look up to him, but I don't necessarily need to talk to him. It's not like I'm dying, oh, I hope one day I will talk to him. If it happens, I would really be grateful. If not, that's cool. I will still enjoy his game.
What's beautiful about basketball to you? How does it compare to soccer in your mind?
I think anyone can have the winner shot. Anyone can have his moment because you are likely to score or to score points. In football, you never know because as a footballer, you expect the striker to score. But in NBA, you have a chance to share the ball and to score goals. So you obviously, let's say you have LeBron, but you know that you have Austin Reeves that can score. You got AD, you got D'Lo. So it's not just LeBron, and LeBron makes the other player better because they can score points as well. And so it means they can enjoy more.
Are you a Lakers fan?
Wherever LeBron goes, I support the team. I was a Miami, a Cleveland, and Lakers fan.
Hey, so you know what? That fandom translates to different places. Lakers in the play-in game again, I believe, here. Are we making a run to the final? Who do you got in these playoffs? They just started last night.
Nah, listen, we have to be realistic. And they play against Nuggets. They just won last year. It's going to be so interesting. But when you have the best player in the world, there is hope.
There is hope. And that's why the Nuggets with Jokic are probably going to win. No, I'm just kidding, man. I heard you went to a Bucks game, a Wizards-Bucks game with your teammates. Tell me about that.
It was great, man. It was great. I wanted to do something with the young boys. And I wanted them to have a really good experience because we have to support. Like, we are so blessed in terms of the teams that we have in D.C., and we have like a football team, we have a soccer team, a basketball team, hockey team. So we should enjoy and try to understand even more, for me, coming from abroad, understand those sports.
Who'd you bring with you? Who are the young boys in your mind?
Matai, Fletcher, Ku, Jackson, and Luis.
Let me make a comparison here, and you can tell me if I'm off. But I'm thinking DC United, Christian Benteke in the middle, Lob City of MLS. You're either DeAndre Jordan or you're Blake Griffin, you're Duncan. Somebody's throwing the lob and you're Duncan, man. The most headed goals in the league, easily the most aerial challenges won. Will you accept DC United, Lob City?
No, that's on you putting that title. But obviously, we all know this is what I do, and this is my strength, so I have to use it.
That goal against Orlando on the set piece, that felt to me like a little bit of an alley-oop. That's almost a dare to the goalkeeper. It's a dare to defenders. The way that ball is shaped, the way it's lofted to the back post, it's saying, go for it. You can win this. Give it a try. But it's always you at the back post. It's always you winning the header. Has this always been the way your game has been, back from the early days, childhood on, or is this something you developed?
No, this is something I developed because I'm someone naturally who's quiet, calm. And I remember when I was probably 12, I was getting bullied because I wanted to have the nice aspect of the game. And so this is something that I remember now talking to you about it, because I was tall, but I was skinny. And I didn't really want contact. I wanted to be nice on the ball. And then I had to learn that, with my size, I should use it even more. And this is why I understood that, there's something that I can do. And then I walked through the years, yes.
How do you develop that skill? Like, what are the steps on the path for you to become? I mean, there is nobody in this league that's anywhere close to you in terms of aerial challenges.
No, I think for me, it's obviously now I have my the physicality to do it, but it's also the understanding. Because obviously I saw so many tall players that they have a bad timing, they get just pushed. So it's all about understanding the game, when to jump, when not to jump. And just the timing between you and the ball.
Can you dunk, Christian? I gotta ask.
I never try.
What? You've never tried?
No, I never tried. We have God. A rim here, but I don't know if it's a really the size NBA rim, so I don't know.
Oh man, this is an experiment I think someday that has to happen. So, look, a disappointing result against Orlando. There's been a little bit of a trend for you guys in terms of dropped points. Before we get to the positive and all the amazing things that Troy has brought to the team and the progress you've made, is there a level of frustration right now in the building of just feeling like there's more there for you guys to grab and you haven't quite grasped it?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. I think we drop points against Cincinnati, St. Louis, Columbus, and now against Orlando. But I think being positive and trusting the process, I will say we are in a good place, because now we know that we can score goals. We know we can create chances. Now it's more about how can we have a complete game? How can we make sure at the end of the day, of the game, we don't feel sorry for ourselves, rather than being, oh, let's hope that we can get a goal and then see if then after that we can win football matches. We are far away from that. We just need now to know how to manage a game through to the whole game.
Take me back to the beginning of this process with Troy. What has it been like working with him? What has he done that's different than you've seen before in the club? What do you like?
Man, it's been fun since the day one. I think what I like with Troy is he looks into details. So it doesn't matter. He will treat Christian Benteke the same way that he will treat Matai or Jackson or Ku, because we all have a part to play, and he gives respect, love, consideration for the players, staff, cleaners, everyone in the building. And I think when you step in the building, you feel like a family, like we are all on the same page. The dynamic is good. Energy is good. And there is no lie. That's the reason why we play that way. That's why we as a team are really good.
It seems like the style of play that he prefers, it requires a lot from the players, particularly in a physical way. How would you describe this game model? What is Troy asking DC United to look like and players to do in order to reach that?
To press, to be front foot. And it makes sense, because if you look at it in a different angle, you know that if you press and regain the ball really high up at the pitch, you've got more chance to score goals rather than tracking back, getting the back from your own boxes and then going back up. So it makes sense. It's tough, but obviously we put the work through during the week to get ourselves ready for the weekend.
It feels to me like it's not just the press, because you can press out of every, you know, you can press out of a mid block. You can choose the areas of the field, but you have consciously chosen that the area of the field that you want to own is the opposing half. And it just feels like you're camped out there for long periods. And that real estate benefits you, because then you're close to goal. I mean, how much, it seems like you're spending so much more time in goal dangerous positions this year than even last year.
Exactly. So because I'm so close, and logically I will have more chance for myself, for the team, and it will lead me to score more goals. And I think that's why as a forward, you want to run forward. You don't want to work backwards. So by pressing, you know, oh, it's going to be tough, you know, but you don't even pay attention about it, because you know you got so much chance on your side by doing that.
Who's the guy that serves the best ball? Who serves the best ball on the team? When they're out wide and you're occupying a good position, you're thinking, come on, cross it. I know you got this.
We're getting really good at it. I will say Jared and Herrera. And Pedro as well.
If I threw a ball down and you looked at me and you said, "Hey, here's how I want you to serve it to me," what would you tell me?
Can I say a click?
Sure.
Yeah, a click.
What kind of ball? Whipped in ball, floated ball. It doesn't matter.
I would say floated ball. Yeah.
Okay. Give you time, get you that timing developed over the years. I heard you talk about Ku a little bit. And for those that don't know, Ted Cutipietro, one of the best, most exciting young attackers in the league. On this show, we're a Cutipietro stan show. We love Ted. We think he's amazing. What makes him so special for you?
I think the energy that he has, he can just run for fun. And he has good feed abilities, like left and right pace. He can finish, and I think every day I speak to him, because I love this kid, and I'm like, man, keep doing what you do, and I'm sure if you dream to go to Europe, you can do it, man.
So you were in Europe, did your thing there, now you're in the United States in DC. Tell me about your life here. What do you like to do? What is a day-to-day existence of Christian Benteke like?
I'm someone pretty chill. I like to train and then go back home, having my nap. And then, just go for some food, like to go to the mall. And basic thing, but this is something that I was missing. And this is something that I enjoy doing my groceries without being disturbed by fans, asking pictures, just being a normal guy.
How often do you get recognized?
Here?
Yeah.
It depends where, but now I've been like more seen by people now that when I first moved. So that's the thing. You want to do well on the pitch, but yeah, you know that on the other side, people will recognize you even more than. But you it start, is what yeah, it is.
You start scoring goals, you start getting recognized at the grocery store. What would be your pitch to other players in Europe? Do people call you and say, hey, how are you experiencing this? Should I come?
But I think that I was having some calls last season once I first moved. But now that they see me enjoying, they see like Messi, all those players coming into the league. Now they're like, I think US is the place to be now. So it's pretty cool for the league.
What do you make of Messi being here?
Man, it's cool, man. And when we play against them, I wanted to play against him because I think as an athlete, you want to compete against the best. Regardless if you're going to win or not, you want to play against the best. And the fact that Messi is here for the image of the league, it's so huge. It's so huge. You have the best player in the world in your league. So
I have to ask you, I watched the Champions League yesterday. We see Kevin De Bruyne scoring a goal, unfortunately, for Man City. It didn't work out in penalty kicks. But which Belgian national team teammate of yours should come to MLS? Regardless of whether they've talked about it with you or it's ever going to happen, which one would you like to see in Major League Soccer?
I would say De Bruyne. He's 33 and he's been around in Europe for many, many years. And I think, I can see him like a team like in L.A.
Enjoying the sunshine.
Yeah.
Tell him to get you some Lakers tickets, man.
Yeah, I probably need to ask him. He has the contact. He's a big dog.
Come on, give me courtside, man. Give me courtside. We'll end it with this then. I'm giving you four selections. You're at the All-Star game. I'm just going to say you can't choose DC United players. Give me your MLS five-a-side team that you would run out. Who are the guys that you want to play with in a small-sided game?
Me included?
Yes, of course. You're on the team, Christian. It's your team.
So myself, Dennis, Mukhtar, Cucho, and Amada.
I'll take Lionel Messi as my first choice. I think I feel safe in that one.
No, I will. Oh yeah, because when I speak about players, like I always put Messi.
Different category.
Yeah, but if I have to, Messi then of course.
What are so special about those guys to you? What makes Denny so special?
I think I like those guys because they bring some excitement into the league. They are type of different strikers. Denis is quick. He's a goal scorer. He's a goal scorer. And don't give him so much yards because he's going to punish you. And Mukhtar is like a smart player who can score goals, can assist. And they're all different. Cucho, it's a goal scorer in the box, really, really dangerous. He can play smart with his move. So it's something that, I like to watch other strikers. And because they're the best in the league.
That's a pretty good team, man. I don't know how people are going to have a hard time getting the ball off you guys. And certainly you'll be pulling out the ball out the back of the net a ton. Before I let you go, this is the last one, I promise. How do you describe this league to your friends back home?
I would describe the league as physical and technical. It's a mix of both because people think, MLS is easy. They don't really care about football or soccer. But until you play the game, you understand that, you will enjoy yourself, but you better be ready. You better respect the league because it is not that easy.
Easy to get your groceries, not so easy to score goals right now. Christian Mateke's got six of them playing New York City FC this weekend on the road. Christian, thank you so much for your time, man.
Thank you, man. It's been a pleasure.
Big thanks to Christian Benteke for joining us and talking all about his Lakers fandom. I should say, LeBron James fandom, wherever he is, so is Christian Benteke's heart. And I don't believe for a second that man can't dunk. I think he's throwing down jams. One hand, two hand, off one foot, off both feet. Christian, I believe in you, man. You can flush it. Thank you as well to Brian Dunseth, the partner in soccer, if there ever was one. Dunny has been around this league forever, and it's wonderful to have his insight on this show. Enjoy Match Day 10, everybody. MLS Season Pass is a spot on Saturday and Sunday, and both games on Sunday are free. F-R-E-E, no money. So check that out. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you on Monday. Adios. We'll be right back.